Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 138, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars. And joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man...
Never fucking fails never, to make
me laugh. Yeah. I don't know why, Dan. I don't know why it's so good. But yes, you could also hear there, the man for whom every day is hump day, it's Tommy Esmond.
You called me a cabbage a minute ago.
Well, I didn't call you, like, just a cabbage.
No.
But you have to wait until the outtakes to see what I actually said.
That was the base level of the insult, and then it went on.
Yeah. Start with cabbage.
Yeah.
Got a bit better, but not much.
Yeah.
I'm happy that I'm just a cabbage.
Yeah. already. Who knows how this week's going to go. Yes, hopefully this week we're going to be joined by a very special guest.
Yeah.
Hopefully you'll hear that in a bit. But before then, Tony has been out and about.
Oh, yeah.
So let's hear about that before maybe I'll stick a segue in somewhere. You never know. I'm like a ninja.
I'll prepare myself as I'm talking.
Yeah.
Go on, if then. You're prepared. Well done.
No. No.
I went to the improper book signing at Orbital yesterday. Very good.
Yeah.
As it were, Christian Wild Goose, Laura Trinder, Matt Gibbs and Ben Reed. It's good. Yeah.
Nice.
Really good. Been waiting for that for a few weeks, that one. We had a bit of a build up to that one. I really enjoyed it. Mind you, it was hard going. I think they were signing from 2 to 6. And then as I was sort of leaving about 6-ish, they pulled out a big box of books for them to all to sign. So they were there. They were definitely there for a good chunk of time. Yeah, it's good. All great company and just larking about. I think Paul from the Orbiting Pod did a little interview with them, so if you keep your eyes out or ears out for that one, that'll be coming out soon as well. That was nice. Some listeners turned up, actually. The Richard Sheaf. Have you met Richard yet? I don't know if you guys... Oh, you met him at Wimbledon, Dan. He's a writer down the tubes.
Yes.
Yeah, top bloke. Yeah, just I meet Richard about 4 times a year, and we just laugh and then say goodbye to each other. It's just sort of one of those sort of relationships.
What, you don't even have any dialogue? You just
not really, very little. Just sort of laugh, stupid things. You know, he's one of those guys. He's one of the writers down on the tubes, and one of the good guys there. Really is a nice guy. And he writes a blog, which we shall put in the show notes as well, which is really good, and a member of the comics chat Facebook group. Chris and Susie Gander turned up. Had a coffee with them. Susie and I have just announced our little project, Coffee House Barbarian, which we just put a teaser out, actually. It's got a really good reaction. Thanks for everyone for retweeting and liking it and that sort of thing.
Can you actually divulge any information about it yet, or are you waiting?
Yeah, I think we're going to wait. I think the poster that I've just put on Twitter and Facebook kind of says it all, so have a look at that. And there's a little clue in it as to what it's about. It's not what you expect as well. Yeah, Susie sent me a drawing of a female character and said, what can you do with this? And I sent it something back and she really liked it. So it's a little sort of project of ours. It will be released later in the year. Yeah, good fun. Tom Curry as well. Tom, Mr. Chucklehead himself, turned up. So I had a bit of a laugh with him. That was good. It was a really nice signing. I like Orbital. They have... it's roomy enough for it. They used the exhibition area at the back, the sort of gallery area, to put the signing in, and also as of yesterday you can buy the Awesome Comics anthology from there as well.
Yes,
awesome. Put it out for us. Yeah, highly recommended, Orbital, for your small press stuff.
Yeah,
very, very professional. Sent us a little invoice straight away. Good little deal for us and for them. Yeah, well pleased.
Yeah. They got a really nice setup. It's always like whenever I go to London I make sure I pop in.
Yeah,
as I'm sure a lot of our listeners do whenever they can.
Pete Reynolds was there as well, who I think you guys met at the first London Super Comic Con we tabled at. He's a good egg as well. A guy I work with. He turned up.
Nice.
Yeah. All together, a nice afternoon. You know, I sort of had a bit of a busy week, and I thought, I've got to go to London tomorrow, and we'll get the train into London and go to this signing. And, just fun. Good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, I picked up a lot of books and... all that blah as
awesome.
Well.
Do you know where else you can pick up a load of comics?
Hey!
Yes, you can go to Comic House. Yay! Yes, thank you very much again to the guys at Comic House for sponsoring this show every week. And as you know, our adverts for them are becoming fairly legendary in their unprofessional nature.
It's almost good that John isn't here, because he'd see what an utter bunch of wankers we are. Because he's so slick.
yeah,
with his adverts, isn't he?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Whereas we just talk about Comic House every week, and yeah. And you can see
he's
why
slick.
When you go, don't they?
He's slick, and we're going in dry. That's the difference. That's a reference.
Are you really doing that now, Dan?
Yeah, before he gets on, because I don't think their jokes are appropriate.
That's true. I'm also American. Halfway through a sponsorship ad.
Oh, sorry. We want to derail that.
Americans no. I don't think Americans would mind going in dry, would they? Have you seen their president?
Fucking so, hell. If you go to comichouse.com, you can find a massive library. Like, if you just want to tune these guys out, just go to Comic House, because you can find a huge library of comics. You can get loads of printed copies of them, like the brilliant Comic House anthology itself, amongst yep. others. Yep. There's a few groovy titles on there at the moment.
I was reading the Dread, the IDW Dread.
Oh, nice.
Oh, what's that like?
Yeah, it's nice. Give that a go.
Nice. Yes, and like if you can't get hold of the hard copies, or perhaps you prefer reading comics digitally, like a lot of us, then you should find out more about the Comic House app, which is available now for only £3 a month if you sign up for the subscription. You get access to all of the comics on the Comic House database, and there's loads more being added all the time, and it's fantastic. You get a 14-day free trial of the app. If you want to find out more, go to comichouse.com. But, we've got even more. Yes, we've got another year's subscription to Comic House.
Oh, we haven't we?
To give away on this show.
Awesome.
Yes. They've got some exciting things in the works, Comic House. But before they reveal that, they wanted to offer you lovely people another chance to have a subscription.
Yeah.
So, how are we going to do this, gents?
I came up with a question earlier, and you two didn't reply to it because I think you thought I was taking the piss.
Yes. do you want that to be the genuine question?
No, I don't mind. Unless you two got one to do.
I don't have a question because I
me
thought
neither.
Yeah. All right. Let's do okay. this. Right. Tony's got a question, and send your answers to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, and we'll announce the winners on next week's show. And the winner will get a year subscription to Comic House, the Comic House app, which is amazing and massive
yes.
value for money. That is huge value for money. But the question is, what, Tony?
Just imagine that we are, in the words of the song, sexy and free, and we're able to date who we like. Who would be each host's ideal date? There you go, that's a question for you.
Now, but are we talking... God, this is just going to be painful. But are we talking in the comic book world? Like, or are we just talking just in general?
I think we'll have imaginary and real people. I think you've got there's a vast... You know, if you think I should go on a date with Scooby-Doo, you might be right.
Oh, my God. I want
the answer that provides the most humour. I think that's the best answer.
Yes.
Yeah, the most original, funny.
Yes.
Let's say dirty. We don't mind dirty.
So it's massively subjective to us. So,
yeah.
What we find funny.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what on earth is going to happen with this. But send your answers to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. And make sure it's funny. If it upsets any of us, then we'll just block you.
Yeah.
If you want to write to go something to do that.
Yeah.
/ fiction as well about us.
Oh,
you know,
Lord.
Don't open up that can of worms, Tony. Jesus.
And don't forget, you can gift this to someone as well, can't you? So you can...
Yeah.
Well, most of our listeners have probably got an account, to be fair, haven't they?
Yeah.
You know, you can also gift it to a friend. If
that's
you'd
a
like.
Great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Share the comics. That's what we're all about.
It's the people that already got it.
Yeah. So there you go, folks. That was the Comic House sponsorship ad. And also a competition that I really don't know how it's going to go.
Yeah.
I might write it myself. Anonymously.
You are going to do the fan fiction, aren't you, Tony?
Yeah, I'd love that. Who would you go out on a date with, though? Oh.
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, Grodd.
Grodd?
Imagine having sex with Grodd. He'd know what you were thinking. I don't think I like that very much.
No.
He can also make you do things as well, can't he?
Oh, yeah.
What about Clayface?
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, when the people say about, like, you'd sleep with a shapeshifter because it'd be great because you could sleep with anyone, go to your partner and say, I'd like you to dress up like so-and-so at work because I wouldn't mind sleeping with her. See how that goes down. Do you know what I mean? That, it wouldn't work.
Speaking from experience.
Yeah,
that's
what yeah, a little of that. Oh, it was the other way around, though. So can you dress up like a...
Yeah. So your wife came up to you and said, do you know Gloria in the typing pool? Yeah. Can you dress up like her?
Oh dear. Has that got the legs for it, but I'll give it a go.
Yeah, I don't know. Your legs are right.
God, could this get any more uncomfortable? I'm sure it could. Yeah. Oh dear.
Yeah. You guys went to sit last week, but I saw it today. Black Panther. I thought it was great. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
It's a good fun film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah. No spoilers.
No spoilers, but I like the rhinos.
Yeah.
I'd imagine a lot of people have seen it by now. Yeah. I would have thought.
Yeah, judging by the numbers, I think most of the world has seen it.
I tell you what, it was one of those things that I don't really know the character very well. And if someone's... It would be one of those characters that someone came up to and said, right, Dan, you got a gig writing 12 issues of Black Panther. I'd be like, I have no fucking idea. I wouldn't know where to start.
Yeah.
But after seeing that film, you can see, right, yeah, there's loads of stuff here to work with.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I like watching the Marvel films about characters that I don't know much about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sort of got cursory knowledge of that one. And yeah, I can't... Most of the others I kind of know, I'm quite familiar with. Yeah. But not so much with Black Panther.
Okay. Yeah. There's not, when you look at it, there's not been a really long running series anyway, has there?
No. Not since like the ones back in the day.
But... Well, not even then, mate. I don't think... I mean, how long did Kirby's one run for? Less than 20, I suppose. You know, Don McGregor's thing, that was less than 20 issues. He was in Avengers for a long run, you know.
Yeah.
I guess with the bigger character, with the other characters, more popular ones, you can say, right, we're going to do a Captain America film, and there's loads of storylines you could choose from to go, that's a classic storyline.
Yeah, you've got 50 maybe, years of story and more, haven't you? You know?
Maybe not so much with Black Panther.
Yeah.
But then again, that's a kind of fertile ground to kind of open up, and you can do something with a character.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah.
You can see why a lot of writers go for kind of the smaller B-list, C-list characters because they want to make their mark with them as opposed to going to a bigger character and this
definitely.
Is all done.
Yeah, there's something you can check. I mean, they use a lot of characters from the Black Panther lore in it, don't they? So, you know.
Yeah. B-list, no longer. He's a proper A-lister and no mistake.
Yeah, he is now, isn't he? Yeah, definitely. Cool.
Okay, so we've got a very exciting guest this week.
Yes.
If you follow us on Twitter, then you know what we're talking about. But yes, a fellow podcaster from one of the big hitting podcasts. I like to call it that because it is that, isn't it? It's one of the Mac Daddies. especially if you like comic book podcasts, then surely you've heard of Word Balloon. And even before we even started this show, we've been listening to that show. So it was we were very, very pleased to grab a few moments with John Suntress to talk about podcasting and just comics in general. And we're definitely going to have him back on after this.
Oh, yeah.
This was just a taste, and he's going to fit in well with us anyway.
Yeah.
So he's part of the family now. So sorry, John.
And
you can't do anything about it.
Since he's from Chicago, that means something different to him, didn't he? You have to be careful there.
Oh God. Anyway, here you go. Here is the interview of the ACP meeting. Word Balloon. Okay, this week we're joined by a very special guest. Now, if you're a fan of comics, then there's probably a good chance you listen to one or two podcasts about the subject. I know a lot of us here, we listen to loads, don't we?
Yeah.
And there's tons of them out there. And this week we're very privileged to be joined by someone responsible for one of the very best. He hasn't paid me to say this. This is what we genuinely think. Yes, that podcast is Word Balloon. And this week, it's our pleasure to welcome John Suntress to the show. Thank you for joining us, John.
Gents, my pleasure. It's I'm very pleased that you guys asked and happy to join in the conversation. Thank you.
Brilliant. Have you ever been on an English one before, John? Or
I think Geek Syndicate back in the day.
Yes.
Cool. I mean, I haven't had a chance to talk to those guys in a while, but I think so. Sometimes people who consider me a rival of theirs are like, well, you never do any podcasts. I'm like, sure I do. I'm like, people just have to ask, and I'm happy to talk to other people.
Is there such a thing as rivals in the podcast? Surely we all just want to get
Isn't that sad? Yeah, I mean, because truly, it's funny. Right before I came on, I was checking Twitter, and my good friend Augie DeBleek, who used to write for CBR, posted a picture of the first podcast panel in San Diego in 2006.
Okay.
And, you know, as far as I was concerned, everybody there, and truly the attitude was, hey, we're all doing this. Isn't that great? Because it was brand new. But I think, unfortunately, you know, after a little while and stuff, I think a little rivalry and protectiveness. It's like sitting at a card game and you don't want to show your cards.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, we haven't got you on the show just to find out your weaknesses so we can eliminate you from the game.
It'll become very self-evident very quickly.
It's blackmail.
So for our listeners out there who may not have listened to Word Balloon, shame on you. But I mean, you mentioned 2006 then. Word Balloon has been going for quite a few years. So let's start off with a classic sort of comic sort of story, the origin story, as it were. How did you start with podcasting and Word Balloon itself?
Well, this was in May of 2005, really, actually the year before. I have a radio background. I did sports talk radio for a long time, and currently working in radio news. But back in 2004, I got a great idea to get with a videographer and try to put together a comics documentary, because I live in Chicago, Illinois, in the States, and you know, there was always a long comic book history, and certainly New York gets the lion's share, and rightfully so, of the various comic book origin stories. But I'm like, you know, Chicago had some very interesting little quirks here and there, if you include comic strip history as well.
Okay.
And so we were trying to put something together, and we interviewed Brian Azzarello and Max Allen Collins, who Mystery for people listening who may not remember, a great black and white 80s comic, and had a great run on Batman. Also a Dick Tracy comic strip writer, the guy who took over the writing of the Dick Tracy comic book.
Quite a lot with, is it Hard Case Crime? He's done some novels with them as well, I think, John, isn't he?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
His character, Quarry, they reprinted one of his stories, and last year it became a Cinemax television show set in the early 70s. Nice. Max is ridiculously prolific as far as short stories, novels, and comics as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were in the midst of making it. It was around the time of Sin City coming out. And the video guy kind of flaked out on me and, you know, didn't finish the project. So I had all these great interviews. And I'm like, well, maybe I should, like, put them out in a podcast form. Because around that time, Jonah Weiland, who used to run Comic Book Resources, CBR, was posting some of his interviews online, and he had interviewed John Ostrander and Greg Rucka, Mike Mignola, people like that. Also in Texas, a guy named Scott Hines was doing a Sunday radio show that he was also streaming called Fanboy Radio, and he was talking to comic book creators. And I'm like, oh, you know, maybe I could start doing this, because I would listen to those and be, oh, if I were interviewing him, I'd ask these questions instead. How come he didn't ask these questions? So, and also at the time, too, I was working behind the scenes in radio and thought this would be a great way to generate new interviews to possibly get me other radio jobs. So in May of 2005, I took those interviews from the documentary and I started Fanboy Radio. I didn't start Fanboy Radio. I started Word Balloon. Then I invented the Chrysler.
And the post-it note.
So, you know, and I mean, at the time, I always lean on George Burns had a great quote about old-time radio. We were all in the top 10 because there were only 8 of us.
Yeah.
And I mean, there were so few comic book podcasts out there. And because of my radio background, this was the era of message boards and creators really kind of speaking through their websites and through their message boards. And I would just approach, you know, cartoonists and writers and say, hey, if you want to come on and talk about your work, I'd love to have you on. And one of my first interviews was with Jeff Parker.
Oh, cool.
Who you might know from Batman 66.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And other great recent comics. But at the time, he had a creator-owned comic called The Inner Man. And Mike Waringo emails me out of the blue.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, hey, I'm having trouble downloading your interview with Jeff Parker. I've got a Mac, and apparently you're on a PC, and I'm confused as to how to download this. Again, 2005, this is happening. And I was just, like, floored that, oh, my God, Mike Waringo is emailing me. I'm like, please come on. And I'm pleased to say that he was not only a guest, but a guy as a creator that I would kind of lean on and go, okay, you're in the business. What am I doing right? What am I doing wrong as far as interview? I mean, what are you enjoying? And he was very nice, and through instant messaging and emails and stuff would kind of go, well, I like this part, and this I didn't care about. Yeah. So, yeah, I really appreciated that. And then by, like I said, I started in May of 05. Well, that summer, the Wizard Chicago convention was still a much more prominent convention than it's become in recent years.
Yeah.
Okay. And I handed out data CDs with MP3s of my interviews, and you know, Greg Rucka and Brubaker and Brian Bendis, and
were you essentially making mixtapes for people? Like
kind of, yeah, I know. Like a desperate teenage girl. Please listen to me. So no, they were great, and man, it was really encouraging. And Rucka's like, I'm gonna listen to this on the plane ride home, thank you, you know, that kind of thing. And again, yeah, because there were so few, people were, I think, intrigued of the novelty and by the novelty. And yeah, I lucked out. And so, you know, really things move fast. And really when I got Brian Bendis, he had such a large following on his message board and his message board community that was the real leap forward to, hey, isn't this a cute little novelty of, oh no, actually a couple thousand people are listening to you. So it was like, wow, okay, that was fast. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've just interviewed Bendis and Greg Rucka, so they're still part of your sort of revolving guests almost, aren't they, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
I know Rucka's isn't that great?
A year or so, isn't he? Or...
Yeah, it's really very sweet, and they have become good acquaintances, if not full-fledged friends. I'd like to think so, and I think think it's mutual.
Oh, dude, you can tell that when you listen.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you guys, as far as wonderful Brits, Dave Gibbons, as I'm sure you have experienced as well. What a gent! I mean, what an incredibly kind person, and I never want to impose on him that much, but man, I love talking to him, and I can't tell you how much I walk on air when you know I see him, and he's like, John, I've heard lately, and the shows have been just, you know, really exceptional. And I'm like, oh my God, Dave Gibbons. I you know, immediately contacted my college roommate, and I'm like, remember when we were reading Watchmen? And I'm like, this is the guy, man. I'm like, and he likes me. He thinks it's good.
He's a very insightful guy, isn't he? He's one of these guys, he manages just to pin down stuff that you know, but you can't sort of put your finger on sometimes.
Go ahead, please.
No, I'll say on your show, I remember him describing the characters in the DC universe in a sort of iconic way, and he just got it. He got every single one of them.
Well, he's seen it all. You know, I mean, that's the thing. It's and that's why I love talking to him, because he lived that 80s black and white boom of creator comics then.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm fascinated by, like, all right, what do you think of what's happening now? Yeah. Because it is so much bigger and louder and more successful for these people, and that's terrific. So that I love. I mean, I just spoke to Danny O'Neill, the wonderful Batman writer and editor, and so I love talking especially to these creators that, like I said, have just kind of been around the block a few times and get what's happening in the business and what they think of all this.
And you've got, I mean, there's one hell of a lineup of catalog of all the creators and stuff, but I think one of the reasons that I love the show so much is you can tell you're still a fan, like talking to these guys. Even if you know them, like, you know, and they've become friends and stuff, you know, there's an ease to the interviews, as it were. I mean, interviews in a loose term, because it becomes just a chat, which is what we try to do on this show as well. Because I find that when you get people relaxed and just talking about the thing that they love, you just get gold. You don't have to work for it, do you, really, sometimes?
Yeah, one of my favourites of yours, John, was recently when you played movie Trivial Pursuit with some guests. And I was on the longest drive home, stuck in the snow, and that kept me going for like the 2-hour drive home.
I'm so glad. Oh, that's great, Dan. Thank you, because honestly, I was concerned that maybe it wouldn't be interesting, because it's old movies. I mean, it was 40s and 50s movies, and I love old movies. I grew up on them when there were only five channels in the American household, and they would just crank the hell out of them and play them. It was Tom King, the Batman writer, and Julie and Shauna Bessent, who are doing Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. Yeah. And they've become very sweet friends, all three of them. And we were talking about it last year in San Diego. Wouldn't it be fun to do that and just get online and do it? I'm like, well, we got to record it because it'll be hilarious.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, it was. It was it almost like you could tell, I'm disappointed for not getting that. It almost become a tiny bit competitive. Yeah. And it was actually quite gripping. I mean, you've commentated on, I'll take it, boxing and stuff in your day, haven't you, John? It's almost like listening to a sport, listening to that go on. It was just hilarious. Yeah.
You know, I love game shows, and I think people like to play along. Yeah. And I did do a previous show live at a comic store with Hilary Barta, who used to be a great Plastic Man artist. And tons of stuff. He's a good friend. And my buddy Jim Terry as well, who recently
Hillary's
did
a big movie fan, isn't he? I think.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, both are. So yeah, we did it at this store, and people were really like in the store, really hyped up to the point that one of them ran out and bought a newer copy of Trivial Pursuit to play like down the street and brought it in. Because again, we were doing the silver screen edition of Trivial Pursuit that was made in like 1983.
Right.
And it's so hard. They have a music version as well called RPM. And those are like the two hardest versions of Trivial Pursuit I've ever encountered. And again, being a guy in my early 50s, I mean, I was playing this stuff in high school and college and everything. And, I at the time I was dating a girl that really was into old movies as well. And I'm like, oh, we got to get this. Okay. Yeah. So I went on eBay and I grabbed, a new copy of Trivial Pursuit and the silver screen edition. And she loved it. But yeah, I thought it would be fun to play. And again, Julie, Shauna, and Tom are self-professed old movie buffs as well. So
cool. And now Tom's become a regular as well, isn't he? Even though he's a sort of fairly new hit on the scene, isn't he? He's now on a regular rotation with you, like Bendis and, you know, Rucker and Fraction. We haven't heard from Fraction for a while. Is he coming back soon or?
Yeah. Well, I did have Matt on in the fall, and that was great. And Matt and Kelly Sue DeConnick, his wife, have gotten so busy writing some television, and they're in the midst of some development things at, I believe, Universal. And not for want of speaking, it's just I kind of figure too that they're kind of busy. And also I know like Matt's books were, you know, with the exception of Sex Criminals, was kind of getting off schedule. And I like Sex Criminals fine. I just like to talk to him about all of his books. My favorite of his books was the one he did with Howard Chaykin, that Satellite Sam.
Yes, loved it. Yeah, but that's up your street. That's about, was it a 50s, early 60s TV show, wasn't it?
Exactly, the golden age of television, the beginnings of TV. Yeah. So that was terrific. You know, somebody, and it's so, I mean, Greg, I suddenly look up and realize Greg Rucka, oh my God, it's been almost 2 years since I've spoken to him. Jason Aaron, I haven't spoken to since the beginning of his Image book, The God Damned.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh man, and I know Jason is coming in Chicago for C2E2 in April, and I'm like, I gotta get Jason back. It's been far too long. So I mean that's the good problem to have. I mean, if I had more time, I'd be putting out a word balloon daily, because it's become social, as you can tell from the Tom King, Julie and Shauna Bessent episode where we're playing games. And you're right. I mean, it is. It's a conversation. John Peel, the wonderful
the DJ. Rock,
I mean, he's one of my go-to guys in terms of how to conduct a successful interview and make it more conversational. Okay. Oh yeah,
he was based in Texas for a while, wasn't he, John Peel?
I didn't know that. I had no idea.
Yeah,
I
just knew him from, he was over BBC there for a couple of years.
Yeah, I just knew him from the air checks that I heard on BBC Radio. So
For those that don't know, John Peel was a big pioneer of sort of British indie music. I mean, the Smiths and these sort of bands were very popular certainly at the start due to him playing them. You know,
Like him and Rolling Stone would do decent interviews, the Rolling Stone magazine. Yeah. But there was another American magazine called Musician that I felt got a little deeper and more idiosyncratic in its interviews, and I think made for more interesting interviews. So it was things like that. Unfortunately, now one of the scandalized broadcasters of American television, Charlie Rose, before we knew about the scandals, we knew of his abilities as a consummate interviewer. And then also a woman on National Public Radio, Terry Gross, who does a show called Fresh Air. I think she's a very conversational interviewer as well. So, yeah, it's those types of people. And, of course, again, because of a podcast, you don't have to break for commercials. You can have a long conversation. And also, it's funny because some people say, oh, man, your conversations go way too long. And my thought is, well, if you have the opportunity to sit down with like a George Lucas and he's willing to go as long as you're willing to go.
Yeah.
But, you know, someone says, oh, wait a minute, you know, only someone's only going to listen for 40 minutes. So, yeah, thanks, George. I'm glad you're giving me 3 hours. But only people only listen for 40 minutes. Yeah, I don't buy that.
Yeah.
I really don't buy that if you're into the
guest.
But
to you and I, Denny O'Neill is our George Lucas, John. Do you know what I mean? And that's what I want to hear. Yeah. I think Bendis said on your show, he said that he was he had a little bit of a rant that I completely agreed with, where he said there's no long form journalism in comics anymore. And and I took it to heart and I started writing much longer articles at the time than I was writing. But I think that almost that hole's been filled by shows like yours, where you really get into the weeds of the creator and what they're creating and why they're doing it and all that sort of thing. I think it's really needed. When you think that we live in the sort of days of crap short tweets are considered to be news items now.
I mean, the Bendis tapes one, the latest episode, at the end of that, I mean, I was interested in his take on Superman, but just hearing him talk about it, and when he mentioned about Clark Kent as a journalist, and he said, well, he chose to be that, you know, without all the powers, and I was like, finally, someone's going to do that story I've always wanted. That, and so immediately I'm going to buy it now.
I'm all over that now.
I hear you, man. No, and as someone who has dabbled in sports press, because as Tony mentioned earlier, I was a boxing writer for a number of years when I was doing sports radio, and also wrote for Ring Magazine and Boxing Illustrated as well. I mean, Clark Kent is my guy, and also the TV show, the 50s TV show, where Clark isn't a wimp and he's not a weenie. They all love and look up to Mr. Kent. And Jimmy and Lois are constantly saying, God, I wish Mr. Kent were here. He'd know what to do. Or he would have those great confrontations with Inspector Henderson of the police. And, you know, he'd kind of put up a blind wall of, oh, well, Kent, it's not important. And he'd go, now don't give me that nonsense, Bill. We know what we're talking about here. All right, Kent, here's the real story. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, man, Clark Kent is an important character. And a force unto himself as much as Superman is, and an agent of change. And yes, I agree. You know, God, the internet itself, I think, generated this idea of short content. It has helped, unfortunately, continue the short attention span that I think our generation continues to devolve into.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, wait a minute. If you've got infinite space, let's fill it with infinite content.
Exactly.
Agree.
I remember also listening to you on Around Comics as well, John. You did that quite a few times, didn't you? Well, that was a Chicago show, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And I mean, they were really good guys. They came around a year later, and Mutual Admiration Society, and they invited me in, and it was just this hangout Friday nights at a comic store. And unfortunately, I was unemployed at the time, so it was free entertainment. And I would kind of show up, and then Scotty Young started doing it more. And I'm like, all right, well, now it's like too crowded of a boat. So I kind of pulled away and let Scotty kind of have his fun. And but great guys. And I think Chris moved away, Chris Niesman, to another town. But I occasionally see Brian Salazar still, and Tom still comes back. And, of course, when I see Scotty, I'm always happy to see him. He lives in the center of the state, about 2 hours away, but he still comes up for Chicago conventions. And great guys. And that was a really, really great, fun conversation show.
Forgive me for getting his name. Who's the French Inca? He was doing Green Lantern at the time. He was on it a lot.
Yes, Chris. Damn it. What's his last name? Shame on me. We got to look that up because, he would ink for Doug Monkey the time.
It. Yeah.
And
yeah,
Christian.
He was great entertainment. Yeah.
Yeah, great guy. And, you know, he is a guy that is a slave to his drawing board. So we just don't see him at shows. And I'm not even sure if he's still even, like, based in Chicago anymore. But, great guy. All right, I got to look him up while we're talking.
Yeah, I'm just thinking the same. Yeah.
Shame on me. I can't believe I can't remember his name.
And then
but
Neesman,
yeah,
Chris Neesman, who I occasionally message back and forwards with, he went to 11 O'Clock Comics, didn't he?
Yeah.
So it's almost like a big happy family, isn't it, of, you know.
Of the long-running shows as well. I mean,
yeah,
like, Word Balloon has obviously been that sort of, it's the trajectory of the podcast landscape over the past, like, 10 or so years has changed so much. I mean, before we knew it, we blinked and we were doing this show for 2.5 years. What do you think is, like, the state of comics podcasts? Not necessarily pop culture podcasts, because they pop up everywhere and they rarely last that long, if I'm being honest.
No, you're right. I mean, that's the thing. And the key to success is showing up. I mean, it's, you know, it's hard when you've got a group of people, I'm sure you guys encountered this, where, you know, getting everyone's schedules in sync to be able to record. Yeah. Life gets in the way. And that's kind of one of the reasons why my thing always was, well, if I do it solo, all I got to worry about is getting the guests to sit down for a second. And sometimes creators are even like, oh, do you mind if, you know, the artist comes in? And I'm like, well, if you can make our schedules work, that's fine. But I'd really prefer to do a one-on-one, because I always feel like someone is going to get slighted in the conversation if there is two guests. Yeah. And I'm almost more worried about making sure each person has an opportunity to speak rather than really getting into the conversation and getting as in-depth as I can when it's one-on-one. But as far as the state of current comic podcasting, I prefer the interview shows.
Yeah,
I have to be honest. And
Christian
Alame, yes, indeed. Thank you so much.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, thank you for doing that. Because he's a very sweet guy.
He is,
and again, I love hearing what the, and forgive the generalization, but the European attitude towards American comics and the American comic book business is. And that's why I love talking to Paul Cornell on occasion. And,
Mike Perkins,
who's been here forever.
Yeah.
But, you know, Mike, you know, again, I just, James Robinson, I think, has a great spin on American heroes.
Yeah,
you know, that's where and certainly Grant Morrison does as well for the 8 minutes that I've had the opportunity
you've had Mark Miller on as well, haven't you? And Pat Miller.
Yes. In fact, you know, obviously with all the news of the new Hit Girl series and stuff, I'm like, oh, I got to email Mark. Mark is ridiculously generous. It doesn't happen as frequently as Bendis and those guys, but he is of that era.
Right.
And God, he came in for a signing 3 years ago now or so. And it was great seeing him. And we picked up right where we left off and had funny encounters personally, you know, in the cons that have been together. And yeah, no, I love Mark. He's again, really smart guy.
Yeah.
Really love his point of view. I disagree. I read a recent quote where he felt the DC Universe characters don't translate as well to movies as the Marvel ones do. And his reasoning, I'm like, oh, I can't agree with that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just they haven't had good writing. That's all. They just need better writing. It's that simple. So. But, you know, so I prefer the interview shows of comics. There's a guy, Dave Harper, who is out of Alaska.
Okay.
And I can look up on my phone and find out the name of his show, but I think he does a really good interview show. I seek out the interview shows.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I prefer. I like listening to Heidi McDonald and the Publishers Weekly people who do a show called More to Come.
Yeah.
Because one of their hosts, Calvin Reed, is a gentleman in his mid-60s and is still excited about comics. And that's very comforting as I creep up to senior citizen status, hopefully slowly.
Yeah.
But I still refer to myself.
No matter how passionate like you get about like the genre and comics in general, I mean, I think there must be a moment where everyone has the, you know, I'm getting fatigued of this particular, you know, subject or this, that. But having a good interview with a creator can really inspire you again, doesn't it? Really rejuvenates you.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, man. And you know, I get fed up and discuss it with certain stories or a direction of not only a character, but maybe a line of comics like, you know, Marvel or DC. But there's so much to choose from. Fine, you go and focus on something else. I mean, I was really getting very frustrated with DC. The beginnings of the New 52 were intriguing, but the changes, we go back to Superman, were so radically unnecessary.
Yeah.
And
seemed
to be different for different sake.
No, I agree with you on that one, dude. I've heard you say that before. I'm completely on side with that. Yeah.
So, you know, so yeah, I'm like, you know, and really when this rebirth started, I was hypercritical and like, okay, well, what does this mean? Because, you know, you've been running us down these corridors of ridiculous ideas. And again, I understand for the idea of like, okay, well, we'll try this and maybe this will stick with people. I thought DCU was very ambitious, but I'm like, there's no way in hell they're going to stick with that status quo that preceded Rebirth, because they're like, hey, we're just like Image. Come see us. And it's like, great. But Image, for the most part, with the exceptions of Saga and Sex Criminals and some of these other bigger selling books, are really a bunch of groups of fans that are around maybe 10,000 or less hardcore committed fans.
Yeah, and I know Kieran Gillen wrote quite a long essay on it, didn't he? About the numbers. Really interesting. And it's only that it's done on that Image payment model is it the reason he kind of kept going with it. You know, if it was a Marvel book at those numbers, it probably would have been canceled, you know.
Absolutely. Well, and further, because of the Image model, the creator gets a fair share of the profits. So a 10,000 readership book is enough to keep you going. And that's great, and pay your artist and everything, and make it happen. 10,000 a month, sure, why not? Or for for 5 issues and a 5-issue arc, and then another 5-issue arc within the year. That's a decent middle class income. Yeah. But that's the thing. But no, it's not going to satisfy DC or Marvel. So yeah, when Rebirth came around, I was highly skeptical, and then of course I read that first book, and of course you put it in the hands of a guy like Geoff Johns who understands what makes DC work. I mean, the editorial edicts prior to DC Rebirth were, well, we don't want to hear about family. We don't want to hear about legacy. And it's like, good Lord, that's what you people are about.
Yeah.
Why would you go against your core concepts that made you great? We love the fact that Jay Garrick is Bart Allen's, you know, superhero grandfather. That's fantastic. Yeah. Mm. And don't give up on that. Are you nuts? I mean, and that's the thing. Good Lord, I mean, the Justice Society, to me, really one of the great teams, because their costumes were so interesting and different from the Justice League. And who are these guys and women? And where did they come from? So I've always been a fan. And again, put Justice Society in the hands of a Geoff Johns, and you had this wonderful multi-generational book of the senior heroes really teaching the young heroes how to act. And still getting the job done. And that, again, as I get older, that's kind of comforting, frankly. That there's entertainment. You know, we see it in the movies now, too. And, you know, by the way, and again, I forgive me if this sounds like pandering, but I'm always fascinated with what is coming out of British film circles as well. Yeah. And I can't even remember the stars, but I do remember the premise. I think Ralph Fiennes, it was a Ralph Fiennes movie. And I can't remember who the woman was. But it was this great kind of senior citizen film, or not senior citizens, certainly people in their 50s, like finding each other and a good romantic movie and stuff. And I prefer action movies and the like, obviously. Yeah. But this was great because it's like, this still happens. It doesn't end at, life doesn't end at 40. No. You know, and I appreciate going for the youth culture because they have more income to blow on crap as opposed to life's necessities. But all that said, it's like, there's a nice sizable audience there that's still looking for entertainment as well. Speak to us. And that's why it's, you know, and it's interesting because, again, in comics, I don't know, there's that Peter Pan syndrome, I guess, label that they want to put on us older readers.
Yeah.
I know the difference between reality and fantasy, thank you, but I can still enjoy fantasy as a getaway.
Finally, we get someone on the show.
There's a number of characters I'd love to have seen sort of age and grow up over the years and not sort of stay in that kind of bubble. But I guess they move on from what they've become. Yeah. Like Peter Parker being the school nerd is kind of like where they want to keep him, essentially. He has moved on, but, you know.
That's tough. Yeah. And I understand that as well, because there is also that Matt Wagner and I talked about this years ago, that sometimes it's best to keep a hero within their original concept. In fact, I think that was one of Mark Miller's points as well, that he was concerned with. And he said Superman is basically a 20th century character. Now, there I slightly disagree with. But his when I was talking to Matt Wagner, we were talking about Zorro. And more so, too, taking him out of the Old West and maybe making him a modern Zorro, giving him a motorcycle instead of a horse. And, you know, it's like, I don't know if that's going to work. Yeah. You know, Peter Parker, again, the quintessential, you know, teenage hero wish fulfillment. It'll be interesting to see how DC handles the Shazam movie. I hate calling him Shazam. It's Captain Marvel, for Christ's
sake. I know. It's also going to be interesting to see how Marvel handle the Fantastic Four when they come back as well. I think that's a similar...
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm hoping that they're going to do that, do right by that, I think.
Don't you guys think it would work, especially coming off of The Shape of Water, to set it in the Cold War? I mean, that's where that's where that Fantastic Four story, I think, does work best. And especially that whole... I mean, you can make him, I suppose, an Elon Musk, Reed Richards, and say, oh, I'm going to do space travel on my own, and that we're seeing that now play out.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It always felt like, again, because of its time, coming from that very late 50s science fiction era, that a lot of the Marvel books were certainly reflecting in its in Marvel's first inception and everything. It's like that's where I think the Fantastic Four work best.
Yeah. Do you ever get people, guests on, John, who let a little bit more go about the secrets of the comic industry than they should? And have you ever sort of held back personally from putting stuff out rather than them asking you to not put it out? Is there anything over the year that, I presume it must have happened, surely?
Sure. No, and it has. And I always like to say I'm a journalist with a small J. I'm not. Yeah. And again, I'm not picking on him, but I'm not Rich Johnson. I'm not looking for
first time his name's ever been mentioned on this show.
Yeah. Kind of like Voldemort.
But yeah, man, I mean, because it's entertainment journalism, I don't want these guys to screw up their career and have, I mean, God, Dan DiDio back in the day let out that they were doing a new Batlash miniseries, and apparently Paul Levitz is like, hey, what are you doing, like, you know, spoiling this on a podcast? Don't do that. And this was, you know, 10 years ago to 11 years ago, something like that.
I've seen Dan DiDio do that at the New York Comic Convention on the stage, to be fair. I think on occasion he gets a bit too excited. As much as I think he's brilliant, Dan DiDio. But
really, again, it shows his enthusiasm for what's going on. But yeah, so I'm always like, look, man, if you said something that you realize upon reflection, hey, I shouldn't have said that, fine, we'll cut it out. It's no big deal. Yeah. I'm here for the macro. I'm here more for what is exciting you, what inspires you, what influences you versus, I just broke news about, you know, book X and I really shouldn't have talked about it.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah. Have you had any difficult interviews? Now, I'm going to say, I think I wrote to you about this after listening to Brian Azzarello gave you a very sort of monosyllabic interview. Is there anyone who's been on you thought, oh, what's going on? This is like hard work, you know?
No, I understand. Brian is a special case because I think that's just his persona that he likes to project and be a tough guy and act like that. And I mean, as I always like to point out, it's like, yeah, I know you're from Cleveland. You're a tough guy. I'm like, I'm from Chicago. You're not impressing me. you know, I'm like, as far as the tough guy stuff, I've dealt with tough guys before. Thank you. Okay. But I mean, and that's the thing. So sometimes I will snap back and especially we did a live interview in Cincinnati at a convention.
Right.
And it's great because you can hear Martin Pasco, the old DC writer who was laughing his ass off while we're going back and forth with Brian being tough and everything. So, you know.
Martin Pasco is one of your best guests. I've got to say, I love listening to him.
Oh, thanks, man. I love talking to him because, again, Marty's one of those guys that has seen it all. And I think, you know, and really has a real clarity of what the Bronze Age was like day to day and everything, and working at DC and working under the Julie Schwartzes and the other editors and his collaborators, and has really deep thoughts on the characters he's had the opportunity to write. I love talking to Marty. Another difficult person, and it was great because I felt like a little bit of redemption. Marv Wolfman, I don't think really understood. I mean, that was pretty early on. And he, you know, I tried to play with him a little bit, and I'm like, you know, wasn't it inevitable that a guy named Marv Wolfman would be writing Werewolf by Night? And he's like, no. I'm like, yeah. Jeez, how long is this gonna be? Are we almost done? And I'm like, all right, sorry. But we did a live interview in Salt Lake City last year,
right?
And it was fun and interesting, and I felt much better. And even he said he didn't remember that we had a bad interview. But over the years, he's like, you know, I'm really not good at podcasts. And I said, well, and this was in preparation for our live talk. Yeah. And I said, but you're okay to talk live in front of an audience? She's like, oh, yeah, no problem. I said, okay, we'll be fine.
Yeah. We want to say quickly, John, you doing an impression has made Nick Prolix, who's the fourth member of our little group, very happy, because he messaged me before we came on and said, get John to do some voices. You've made him very happy there.
No, I can't. You know, Dan Dio speaks like this great American comedian named Jackie Mason.
Yes. Yeah.
And all right, let me tell you. All right, we're going to do this great thing with Superman. I think we're all very excited. Let me tell you. You know, I mean, so I can't help it. Stan, of course, when he talks, and, you know, I don't remember what the inspiration was. No, so you can't, I mean, that's, God, you miss real character voices. And it's sadly, too, societally, I believe, people get so offended so quickly that, God forbid, you slip into a dialect, immediately you're a racist. And it's like, hey, man, no, I'm not. I appreciate the musicality of the voice and the difference. And, you know, I mean, that's and truly that is it's for me, it's fun. And it was a big part of what I did in sports radio as well. And I think now it's like, oh, my God, I'd be like fired immediately because some group would be offended by what I see as a very idiosyncratic voice. And it's like, no, I'm not making fun of. an ethnicity. I'm having fun with. Listen to how he talks. Listen to the musicality of this voice.
But that is how DeDio is, isn't it? DeDio is an absolute hilarious individual just to watch talk on stage.
Right.
He is like a stand-up, isn't he? You know.
Right. I mean, that's the fun. And again, his enthusiasm when he is excited about what they're doing at DC, it usually translates to the projects. And I've been reading about the presentations that they've been doing recently for some of these new lines that they're doing, like DC Zoom and the young adult lines that they're coming up with.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's Ruck always said that DC and Marvel are like the tortoise and the hare, and that Marvel is the hare and moves so quickly. But every now and then when you think that the hare is, you know, winning by three laps, all of a sudden you look and there's the tortoise right next to him because, you know, they're just kind of slowly trudging along and suddenly doing the right things. And that, I mean, I wouldn't say that universally, but I do think DC Rebirth has been a great shot in the arm for DC. And again, this new excitement that they have for some of these things. And they're different products than what we're going to get, what we get every Wednesday. What day is New Comic Day in Britain? Is
Wednesday, also- same. Wednesday. We get the same day. Okay. Yeah. In fact, we actually get it before you do because obviously time zones are different.
That's
it seems
true.
Weird. A bit like Marvel movies. We get them before you as well. It's like
yes, you do.
Yeah. We got Captain America a week before you. I understand the irony.
Stop showing off, you know. Tony. He'll never come back if you keep doing this.
Speaking of the young line, the DC Young Readers line, I know you met Christian Wild Goose in... New York, didn't you, John? He was sat next to Mark Lamming.
Yes, yes. And and shame on me, I haven't had a chance to actually get him on or anything.
Yeah, he should. He's doing the Batman. He's doing the Batman version of that. So so you should get him on. Yeah,
I should. Yeah. Well, that's like Jeremy Watley I met who did that new Wasp for Marvel. And Princeless was one of his kid books and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I meet these great creators. And then suddenly I look up and it's like, oh, yeah, that was 15 months ago. And it's like, oh, son of a gun, what am I doing?
Is there anyone who you really regret that you haven't got them on yet? You've always been after, you've always been badgering them to get them on. You've had Giffen on once, haven't you? I know he now refuses.
I was saying to Tom, obviously, or no, it was Jeff Lemire that we were talking about Giffen. Giffen really has become very reclusive in terms of is done with the fandom. As far as interacting with them on a first, you know, one-to-one basis.
He was in New York this year. You know that, don't you, John?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I got a signed print from him, yeah. He was at the table that sells his art. It's normally an artist alley, but it had been moved upstairs. He was sat at that, yeah. Yeah, I was surprised.
Oh, man. Well, I just know that it's tough to get him, and I don't even know if he does still speak to Newsarama or CBR when something is up, but I just know... I've asked him, you know, hey, would you want to do a podcast? He's like, no, not again. And I'm like, all right. You know, and that's cool. That's all right. But yeah, they're all older creators. And I mean, the great white whale is Steranko. I love Jim Steranko. Wow. And he, with him, it's a game and it's okay. two San Diegos ago, he has this great single piece. He wrote that wonderful crime graphic novel called Chandler, Red Tide.
Right.
And he has this single piece that he did for the Society of Cartoonists, I believe, as a, you know, just kind of a commemorative poster, and he still sells it. And it's this great single image or single picture, but a million things are going on. And he was selling it to someone. He's like, oh, you know, this is one of my favorite pieces because really it's one image, but it really tells a whole story.
Yeah.
And I had my iPhone with me, and I'm like, Jim, I'm like, if you don't mind, you know, I've been like dying to have you on the podcast for years because we've talked back and forth.
Yeah.
And he just kind of like dangles it in front of me and then, of course, snatches it away. And he goes, and I said, but I go, I've got my iPhone right now. You're about to go into the story. Could I at least record that? Because I know my audience would love it. He puts his hand on my shoulder. He's like, John, I really appreciate the fact that you didn't just record it and put it out and you asked me personally. And the answer is no. And I started laughing and he laughed. And I'm like, okay, go ahead. Do your performance. Fine, Jim. And I almost wonder, because he comes from stage, that he almost would rather tell his stories, you know, in panels and at his table at a convention.
Yeah.
And so that the material isn't like, yeah, we already heard that one. All right, Mel Brooks, we heard the Hitchcock story a million times when you do TV. You know, that kind of thing. I maybe I'm wrong. I'm probably misreading it. But, you know, he likes being, as Bendis calls him, the Orson Welles of comics. Right. And he is. And I mean, that's the thing. Again, there's a guy that struck out on his own, has done so few comics, and has had such a great impact on the industry with such little amounts of work. That's pretty neat.
And you know, I agree. Yeah. When you look at the page count compared to some other artists, it's quite low for Strenko, isn't it? You know,
Oh, yeah.
Was so good, you know.
Yes. I mean, and that's the thing. Yeah. And then it was just like, all right, I figured out this comics thing. I'm going to go off and do something else. And he has. And I mean, you know, in a good way, too, has gone for the money. And I don't mean that in any crass way. You know, it's, hey, do you want to make comics and make pennies, or do you want to do paperback covers and make real money? Yes, please.
Yeah.
You know, so he went off to do the shadow covers and various other paperbacks and other art things that he's done over the years.
The stories he must, because he was a fucking escapologist at one point, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. That's his stagecraft. He was an escape artist, absolutely. And and also, you know, played in a 50s rock band. I mean, that's the thing. He really is a performer, a stage performer, and likes doing that. And that's why he's always in the double-breasted suit. You know, he's an impresario. He enjoys the performance end of comic conventions.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Nice. So, right. Last question before we let you go.
Okay.
Right. Let's get this down on paper. Let's get this like official.
There we go.
Right. I'm building this up. It's not gonna be that great. Who is your hands down your favorite comic book character out of all of them? If you had to pick one.
Yeah.
Ooh, good one. If I have to pick one, it's probably Superman.
Okay.
But nice. But I have a huge affinity, and we were just mentioning Starenko, for Nick Fury, classic Nick Fury.
Yeah.
I have nothing against Samuel L. did a tremendous job in the movies.
Yeah.
And certainly has the same spirit of Nick Fury in his portrayal.
I get why they
decided that, oh, let's make Nick Fury look like Samuel L. Because, again, I mean, millions have seen Sam be Nick Fury, and that's great.
Well, isn't the story, I mean, we talked about this before, John, isn't the story the fact that they knew that Samuel L. Jackson was a comic collector?
Yes.
They thought they might be able to flip the pages.
It's true. Well, I don't know. You mean sell them and everything?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. It might have been for that very crass commercial reason. I remember asking Miller and Bendis back at the beginnings of the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just thought too, it was that they knew he was a comic book fan and he might like think this is fun, as opposed to, although you're probably right.
That's
because
English cynicism, I'm afraid, John, there probably.
Well,
yeah.
Well, but I think you might be right, because then, of course, Miller and J.G. Jones created Wanted and made sure Eminem looked like their main character in Wanted.
Yeah.
And Eminem was not happy about that.
Wasn't he? Yeah, I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He made a real stink about it and everything. So. Yeah, so you're probably right. It probably is from that commercial sets. But yeah, I mean, Superman was my first character as a little kid. I sadly old enough to remember when they were, I don't know how much they were in England, but 12 cents, just over a dime to buy a Superman comic in the very early 70s when I first started reading. And it was, you know, sick, and my relatives would come with a stack of comic books for me to read. So Kurt Swan Superman is my original hero.
Oh, I'm a big fan. I mean, I'm I think I'm only a couple of years younger than you, John. So Kurt Swan is my go-to guy, yeah, always. Just for the sort of weirdness of it. Fucking, for quite a sort of straight goer, Kurt Swan drew some fucking weird stuff, didn't he?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and again, that's Alvin Schwartz and Leo Dorfman and those great 60s Superman writers giving them the crazy concepts. Jimmy Olsen, my God. I love the Jimmy Olsen books. Their craziness. He's a wolf man. He's a caveman beetle. He's, you know, Turtle Man, of course, Elastic Lad. I mean, just, and even Lois, you know, Lois going through Fat Lois, Old Lady Lois, Witch Lois, you know. So, yeah, there, it was fun. And that's the other thing, too, is I sometimes, there's part of me that gets not angry, but just disappointed in the, looking back at comics from that era, and God, isn't this goofy? Isn't this stupid? It's like, okay, you don't understand the intent in which these were made. The audience it was made for, it was made for a 10 to 12 year old audience. There's also a dash of, hey, this is happening in pop culture, so let's capitalize on it like the Beatles. Yeah. You know, I mean, and that's, it's all that stuff. Isn't this goofy? No, it's not goofy. They're commenting on pop culture for a kid audience. Yeah. And there's a real slyness to the presentation that I think a lot, I'll tell you, there's no, the one thing I would love to change about comics journalism is I'd like you to learn your craft before you start doing it, because there's a lot of writers and podcasters, frankly, that just open a microphone or just decide to type something and do think they're Clark Kent or Lois Lane or whatever.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, you don't know what the hell you're doing. You know, it's like, you know, and you don't know what, oh God, my recent one was, has nothing to do with comics. The claim that the 1960s Star Trek, that the Klingon makeup was blackface and kind of a dig at black people. And I'm like, you know what the fuck you're talking about.
If there was ever a show that did the opposite, it was Star Trek, John. Do you know what I mean? To me.
Yes.
If there was ever a show that showed how progressive we should be, it was fucking Star Trek. Yeah.
Well, and it was just alien makeup that happened to be dark brown. And it's like, no. They made people blue. They made people green. It was just another color in the spectrum. It had nothing to do with any, you know, negative feeling towards black people. And you're right. I mean, God, Lieutenant Uhura is an officer on that bridge schooling Abraham Lincoln and saying, yeah, don't worry, it's all right. We're better than we were in your time. Yeah. It's okay.
First interracial kiss on television, wasn't it?
Damn straight. Yeah. Damn straight. Yeah. I mean, so that's, and again, it's just a passing comment about recently comparing Discovery, which drives me nuts, to the original series. Yeah. And it was like, I'm like, man, way to miss the point completely. And unfortunately go for, well, I'm offended because, you know, this makeup is, I'm like, wow, man. You know, and I really, again, back to the dialect comment as well. I don't know, man. I mean, it's, I want people to be respected, of course, but I also think people are far too easily offended in today's society.
Yeah, I think people forget it's just about fun, John. It's about having fun stuff, you know? Really.
I think they're a small crowd, but they've got a very loud voice.
Yeah. Exactly, man. No, you're right. I mean, and again, that's the thing. The best and worst thing about the internet is, the rise of social media and for the individual to be incredibly loud compared to what was, you know, the letters pages of the old days.
I had a post popped up the other day that from a Vampirella cover from last year that they'd sort of taken a parody cover of like those old 1950s men's mags that were kind of quite lurid.
Sure.
And they got a load of sticker for that. And it's like, well, it's parodying stuff from the past that was kind of like, if you look at it through that exact same lens, obviously it's going to look kind of out of place and offensive because that's what it's looking back at. And
everyone's looking at the length of Supergirl's skirt, or you know where Wonder Woman's butt is on the page, and you know, I really do think there are even specific websites that are not as bad as a Breitbart. As Milo Yiannopoulos was fascinating to watch because he certainly had his opinions of comics before he blew up and disintegrated, thankfully.
Right.
I just think people are the knives are out before the image is out, and they are ready to pounce and say, sexist, racist, whatever ist you want to put on it. And it's like, okay.
Not the intent. I think people need to remember it's not the intent. Look, come on.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of the time. Yeah. But I think the thing is, John, as well, is like when you get like I'm not saying proper comic fans, when you get like nice people, good people together to talk about comics, like you do a good convention. There's nothing better than that, dude, is there? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then we forget all these sniping people on the internet, and I can't be bothered with them. Do you know what I mean?
God, no, yeah. I've never encountered anyone like this in any comic convention I've come across. Like that kind of attitude. All those great people who want to talk about the characters and the craft.
I'm glad to hear that from a British standpoint, because there have been a couple times where I think an extreme group has kind of made an appearance and taken over the Q&A of a panel.
Right.
And skewed it towards a specific political bent. And it's and the response is, hey man, we're all here to have fun. Can you not like harsh our you know, if I could sound like a stoner, can you not harsh our mellow?
I'm really going for a bloody comic convention. That's low hanging fruit. I mean,
absolutely, so my God.
Yeah.
So let's end on the positive then, shall we? Shall we end on a positive?
Yeah, I was going to say about C2E2. You've got C2E2 coming up.
I do. I'm very happy. I got a couple panels I'm doing. I know for a fact I'm interviewing. I don't think he makes it to England. Svengoolie, who is this horror movie host. That is based out of Chicago. So I'm doing a one-on-one with him.
And Lambo's coming over. Mark Lamming, I think he's over for it.
Oh, that's great! Excellent, man. You know, and Mark's a sweet guy, every time I see him, I'm like, how come I haven't had you on yet? Because God, I love his art. His art is so great.
Yeah it's right up our street as well. It's this classic line, isn't it? You know, it's just you know, there's certain area stuff he just does so well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Plus, I'm looking forward to, is it Wonder Woman? His gig, he's got a Wonder Woman gig.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, he draws great women, doesn't he? You know.
Who is the writer?
It's not Jeff Parker again, is it? It's James. Is it James Robinson? I'm trying to remember who is.
Oh, is he going to be working with James before James?
I think it's James Robinson.
Working with him again. Yeah, I think so.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's
I like
love talking to James. James is wonderful. Yeah. And then James is the guy that sometimes that gets, because he's got such a distinct writing style. Sometimes he gets ripped on, and it's like, what are you talking about? This guy's great.
Even when he's there. Were you there for the Around Comics when he drank the whole bottle of scotch sitting there with them?
I was not at that one.
Yeah. Jeez.
I asked him about that because I sat next to him at New York a couple of years ago, and he said, I was completely off my face. I can't remember what I said. I thought, that's brilliant. Yeah.
Not too surprising that.
Yeah. So he's... I always try to talk boxing with him whenever I get to see him.
Oh, good. Yeah. We need to talk boxing, John. I'm a boxing fan.
Oh, anytime, man.
When I see you,
Joshua, and I'm very intrigued by this Joseph Parker fight coming up. I think it's going to be tough for both men. And maybe I'm in the minority, but I think Ortiz is going to give Deontay Wilder, Deontay should win, but I think Ortiz is the livest opponent that he's ever faced. And I think lefty and a skilled boxer and has power and can take a punch. So,
Do you remember the British boxer Alan Minter, John?
I do indeed. A middleweight.
When I see you, I've got a classic, not for air, Alan Minter story for you.
Oh, fantastic! I would love that. Oh, and Barry, I love Barry McGuigan, the Irish cyclone. I follow him on Twitter, and I adore him. And Jeff, the flyweight, Jeff Chandler.
Right.
Not Jeff Chandler. Jeff Chandler's a Philadelphia fighter. Oh, God, I can't think. He fought Azuma Nelson. Jeff, that was his name. I can't remember now. It's all right. It's all a blur.
We're getting old, man.
Yeah. I know. It's sad. It's true, man. It's sad but true.
Yeah.
So, guys, I would love to come on another time and have more time with you because we will have you on to set
the world to rights without a doubt. Yeah, you are welcome back anytime. So.
Oh, my pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
So where can people find Word Balloon, etc.?
Well, wordballoon.com is that's where the website is. I also am I've joined Blog Talk Radio, which is a nice podcast platform that is offered to host the show for free and even scurry around and look for advertisers and regional advertisers. I had Australians tell me they were all excited because a local chemist franchise. They're like, "How'd you get these Aussie, you know, pharmacy people?"
Yeah, you got a British advert on our ones, John.
There you go, man. Yeah, I mean, great. And I'm like, I got nothing to do with it. They're going out regionally and grabbing these wonderful clients. So that's terrific, and that's been a nice relationship that started in the fall. But yeah, so there, and of course iTunes, and anywhere you can find podcasts. If you look for Word Balloon Podcast, that's where you'll find me.
Brilliant. Nice.
Well worth a listen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of the Rucker one at the moment. It's class, John.
Oh, that's great.
Really enjoying it.
Well, again, I open the mic and I get out of the way and I let them, you know, speak their piece, and it usually works out. So, no, thanks, man. And really, I've been lucky. This year has really been a. It started off great in January and it hasn't stopped. So, you know, we're almost upon March, and I've still got great people to talk to that have, you know, we're lined up, and I'll get them on, and I try. That's all I can say is I try. So it's really appreciated that you guys like what I do, and really that's a high compliment, and I appreciate your listenership. Thank you.
I've been listening to since I used to burn it onto a CD and play it in my car. I've been listening since those days, John. So
I do the mixtapes as well.
I know what you mean, man. I would do that with podcasts as well, so I could listen to it prior to technology keeping up with our list habits.
Yeah. Good.
There you go, folks. The Mighty Word Balloon in its
first
ever crossover with the Awesome Comics Pod.
Oh, he's so good, isn't he?
Yeah, such a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird, isn't it? I'm the same as you guys, but I've been listening to that podcast for well over a fucking decade now.
Yeah.
You know? But I'm relatively new to it, I have to say. So I've got a lot of sort of catching up to do.
Yeah. In all seriousness, folks, if you like your comics, certainly with like the big name creators and stuff, Word Balloon, he gets some absolute stellar lineup of guests.
You name it, he's had them on. Literally, pretty much everyone. And we get into that, don't we? But he's had nearly everyone on. You know, I've done really, really nice guy there, because I walked up to him. He was standing chatting to, I think, Vander at New York this year, Vander and Lamming. And I walked up and he went, "Oh, hi, Tony." And I thought, I've only ever spoke to you like twice before, very briefly, but you remembered my name. And I thought, he's a proper pro. Do you know what I mean?
No one forgets you though, Tony.
That's it. Yeah.
His enthusiasm and love for the comics. Absolutely.
When you got a one man show and he's putting out that much product for so many years, that just shows the love of it, isn't it? Definitely.
Last one, John.
So, thanks. We're having back on. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But as for the rest of our little show, do we have any shout outs this week, gents?
Yeah, I've got one.
I've got one.
Okay, you go on, Dan.
I was going to give a shout out to a Kickstarter.
Oh, okay.
Merrick, the Sensational Elephant Man, and Dr. Crow, issue one.
Oh, this looks good.
This is a crossover issue where Merrick and Dr. Crow both return to Kickstarter together for the first time in a rip-roaring Victorian pulp crossover adventure. I love seeing characters crossover, and I know it's very difficult in small press because it takes me about 6 months to put out a comic. So the idea of doing a crossover is like a mammoth undertaking. But it's got 27 days to go. Check that one out. That's really good. I've got to put in on that one myself.
Oh, good.
I did go through my Kickstarters, like, you know, the projects you've backed, and I thought, oh, I've not heard anything from that. I've not got anything from that. I've not got anything from that. And just that, the whole list, I was like, I've fucking not heard of any of these.
I will say this. Yeah. I've pledged to a couple of Kickstarters recently. Thankfully, that it's projects where the book is done, or, you know, I no longer get. And I was looking at them, and the biggest amount, I'm not going to say any names or anything, and it's not small press or anything like that, I just want to say that, but the biggest amount I've ever pledged to a Kickstarter, and it's been about 2.5 years, and I haven't had...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't had anything.
That sucks.
Yeah. And it's,
I think
and it's one of my favourite creators.
So, oh, is it? Oh, dear.
Yeah. So.
We went through that little period where we thought there was a lot of people who were going to ruin Kickstarter for the rest of people, weren't there? I know there's a couple of examples we talked about on a show a while ago. But I think people now realise you've got to take the rough with the smooth with Kickstarter, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And pick and choose your ones, I think, to a certain extent.
Pick your spots, baby.
Yeah.
It's difficult because I kind of, that thing of like, right, we've done this comic, we just need to print it. You order this and we're going to put it Kickstarter, whatever. That appeals to me a lot more than fund this comic and then maybe in a year or so time you might see it. We've never done this before. You think, oh, fucking hell.
There's a few people out there you can look to, and somebody like Stuart McCune as well, Reynolds, and they're game ready, aren't they? As soon as they press go, you know you're going to get it in a month or so through the post. That's how you got to go about it in the comics Kickstarter world now, I think, you know?
Yeah.
You've got to be pretty much finished by the time you launch it.
Yeah.
Even 50-75%, I think, is a good idea because of the turnaround time of doing one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right, mate. Yeah. I've got a shout out from something that was sent to us by our friend Simon Robbins, Digitopia.
Nice.
Written by Farhan Qureshi, art by Sebastian Pires, and colours and letters by Simon. They sent through, I think it's about 10, 12 pages of a preview of something that's going to be going, Digitopia, the comic that's going to be going on Kickstarter soon. It's a sort of dystopian story, rich versus the poor, violence and tyranny, and lying over the top of that is a father trying to get his daughter to safety. The intention is the guys are going to create a long-form graphic novel from this, and the preview pages look fucking outstanding. I've got to tell you, I think Farhan is a London creator, because I know because he followed me today on Twitter, and I looked at his profile. But if you head over to www.comic.digitopiafilm.com, you'll see more about the project. There's sort of character drawings and pages are up, and little design features and a little story about all the creators and stuff like that. Really a real professional package, talking about Kickstarters. And they've not even launched on Kickstarter yet. They're getting a bit of buzz before they launch on Kickstarter, which seems like quite a shrewd business move to me. You know, get everyone excited before you have to hit that month, the button on that month, to then get the sort of the fever up about it, you know. So, yeah, very good. That's my one.
Cool. Just a tiny little one, something that I saw on the Facebook group that I've already taken advantage of. If anyone out there gets a Humble Bundle.
Oh yeah.
Image are currently doing a Humble Bundle at the moment. You basically donate pledge whatever you want, and depending on how much you pledge, it all goes to charity. Not all of it. It does tell you the breakdown as well when you say how much you're going to pledge, as it were, and you get a whole list of trades and issues and all kinds. So if you go on the Humble Bundle .com, I'm sure it is, Image have their latest one, which I've taken advantage of their deals before, because it's a great chance. I don't know about you, sometimes I miss out on a volume one of an Image book.
Yeah.
And it's a great, you know, you can get like probably about 5 or 6 graphic novels and a whole load of issue ones for like 75p.
Yeah, I did the Dynamite Comics one a while ago, and it's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's such good stuff on it.
Yeah, it's a great way to discover like a new sort of favourite, isn't it? Really.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's mine.
Real.
That's right.
Okay, then it's that time of the show. It's time for the recommendations. Okay. Who's gonna? I know. I sound like a game show host, don't I?
You do. You've gone full Partridge again. I like when you go Partridge.
Yeah. It's all the cold medication that's coursing through my veins at the moment. But anyway, you know, flu be damned. Let's talk about some comics. Who wants to go first?
Go on, Daniel. Tony, you go.
Me. Oh,
go on.
Okay.
Yeah, go on.
This is the comic that was given to us at True Believers. Hunter Gatherer.
It's
Hunter plus Gatherer, or Hunter and Gatherer.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the first issue, I spoke to Kevin Gerber, the writer for the project, and we did the interview.
Yeah. Yes. You can hear that on the True Believers show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he gave us a copy of the comic, which is absolutely fantastic. It's published by a Double Draft comic studio. Kevin Gerber, and the art is by Storpio Skills. That's a kind of stage name. I can't recall the chap's real name. Apologies. He's an absolute bloody art beast.
Yeah.
Oh, is he?
A small little independent publisher. And this is their debut comic book. They're coming out with another one later in the year called Gung Ho, which is H-O-E.
And that's the sort of grown-up title they're working on, isn't it, I think?
Yeah. It's a sort of Tank Girl-esque. Yeah. Sounds really good.
Yes.
Good. Check them out on they've got a Facebook page, but not a comic page at the moment. So if you look for Double Draft comic and Facebook, it'll pop up. We'll put the link in the show notes. It's a bit of a long one, to be fair.
Yeah.
But it's a great, it's about like a sort of an agency where you've got these two characters. One goes by the sort of the code name of the Hunter, and the other one's the Gatherer. The Hunter's like Cecilia Wagner. She's the typical kind of She-Hulk style superhero, big muscles, does all the physical stuff, and the Gatherer is Simon Bradbury, whose nickname's Quiver Boy, and he's kind of like the information gatherer. And it's just an absolute madcap adventure that they kind of get put on and face this kind of like skeletal style He's a bit Joker-esque supervillain. It's really good fun. I mean, the writing and the art go so well together. Looking at the comic, I'm just absolutely blown away by both. It's really well done.
I must have missed this. Did you do this when I was out off the table for a while?
Yeah.
I can't visualise. You'll have to stick some pictures up on the Facebook group, dude, because, I'd love to see this.
It's really hard. It's kind of like manga-esque, but there's a lot of sort of Western superhero stuff. It's kind of a great fusion between the two.
Yeah, there's some sort of things that remind me of maybe a little bit Terry Dodson. A little bit of sort of West, sort of Eastern influences. It's absolutely, or like Humberto Ramos sort of influences. There's lots of things going on. It's fantastic stuff.
Loads of pop culture reference kind of littered throughout. It seems like it's a shame that there's not more. They haven't got like their website sorted out yet, because it feels like this is ready to kind of go big. It's great. It's really well done, really well polished. I just want to see more from the guys.
Cool.
Yeah, when I looked at it, it was sort of like it reminded me like the Red Mask in the sense of it's just fun. It's totally fun. Is what it is, and it's, you know, it's just good fun comics, which we need more of, I think.
It's like that Battle Badges, when you pick it up and you think, fucking hell, why is this not on comic book shelves now? Because it's the quality of production, art, writing are all right up there. And it's a great title. So go check him out. I think you can order the first issue of the comic through the Facebook group. They've got details on there. The first issue actually contains the entirety of the first issue and about 5 pages preview of the second issue. And they've got the Gung Ho advert in the back, which looks awesome. Can't wait for that to come along. So, good work, Kevin and Scorpio.
I mean, how much has Small Press leveled up recently? Even in the 2.75 years we've been doing this show?
Yeah.
Fucking hell, it's really improved. I was thinking it this week with old Andy Cliff Boys, Captain Cosmic. And John, John cross-posted the review, and in the review I wrote, this is worthy of a Boom comic. And he agreed, and he says, well, Boom, don't pick this up, they're idiots. This is perfect for them. And I agree. There's a blurred line now between a lot of the really good Small Press stuff and the big company stuff, and there really is.
One of the things these guys said in their kind of press release thing was they were unhappy with some of the content that the big two were putting out, and they wanted to put out something that they like and they thought other people like. And I get the impression there's a fair bit of that going around.
Yeah, I make them mind on that.
Put out comics that they want to see and they think other people want to see.
That's the way to do it. You make the comics that you want to read. You don't make them for anyone else, you make them for you, and then people will pick them up. That's the way I've always seen
I
think that's a good idea.
Wayne's World too, build it and they will come.
But that kind of Pat Mills thing he said to me about, like, right, find out what's popular and write a comic on that aspect about something that interests you in it. And then you're onto a winner there, surely. If you get the magic right.
Yeah, I think when you're so in the weeds of a project and you're writing something very new, it takes over. You stop worrying about, you know, what's going on and what's on Instagram and, you know, what the sort of political flavour of the day is that you think you should side with and, you know, this sort of thing. I think once you're in the weeds of writing something, that doesn't matter to you, does it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Mine's all about the mechanics of the story working and all the elements fitting together and story paying off for the reader. So they're getting them interested and stuff. I don't really take all that other shite in.
Yeah.
Kind of forcing in kind of like weak political messages or jabs at people. I just thought,
posing. Yeah. I mean, as much as I would like to do a Busy Phillips comic, you know, it needs to be your own voice, doesn't it? I think.
Yeah.
I feel there's one thing, like doing the pop culture references in comics, and I've picked up stuff that's only like 10 years old and you're reading it, so bloody hell, that fucking dates it badly.
Yeah.
Gotta be careful with that.
Yeah, I think as well, it's a lot of things are of the moment and popular, and you think, fucking hell, remember when that used to happen, when people used to talk about that? And I think if you go with that, you're going to be behind the curve immediately, aren't you? You just got to have fun. Have fun with it. You know?
It's like you said, if you can, the zombie thing at the moment, if you think, right, now's the time to fucking do a zombie comic, it's like, Jesus, you've missed the fucking curve on that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We can think of a few other ideas along the way there. People might be. Definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, Hunter, is it Hunter Plus Gatherer, isn't it? Yeah, Hunter Plus Gatherer.
I think it's Hunter Plus Gatherer. Gatherer. There's a couple of things that reference it, Hunter and Gatherer, but I think it's Hunter Plus Gatherer. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so if you see Double Draft at a convention, go and check them out. Because they're thoroughly nice as well, because they spoke to us. So there you go.
Yes.
Yeah, makes me all right, isn't it? I think you should. I think we should give a little pimp to your new book, actually, as well, Vince. I was fucking chuffed to see that arrive.
Oh, yes, yes.
How good does that look, mate?
I'm quite pleased. Devil Kickers, the physical editions of Devil Kickers, the novel I co-wrote with Daniel Marchant, will be available fairly soon. We went through the sort of final processes, so hopefully in the next week or two, I think it's going to be available for purchase direct from Amazon. But what I've also done, I can sort of order stock, if you know what I mean, for...
You get reduced by stock, do you, for that?
Yeah, kind of thing.
Oh, real. Yeah.
So I will at the Swindon Comic Day, I'm going to have a couple of copies with me.
Yes.
So and they'll be going for £10 each.
Yeah.
So yeah, and please come up and get one.
It's great to get one. Yeah, definitely.
I'm very pleased with how it all came out and
What on you? Look at you. You published novelist.
It's really weird. It's really weird, but it is inspiring and like it makes you want to do more.
Definitely. Yeah, I know what you mean.
And
yeah.
I have plans for the next book and that I've been talking to Dan about. So,
is it a naughty threesome about three blokes who have sort of really sexy affairs and do a podcast?
No, that was a lie I told you just to do it.
It's his research.
I read Devil Kickers in every few days, so I loved it.
It
was really good.
I can't
wait to get a bit of Vince Hunt in my hand. That's what I want.
Daniel.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you to everyone that has bought the digital or something. But I know a lot of you people out there, you want to get your hands on the physical. We were. So,
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Not saying who, I get their hands on some Hunt.
But it's so strange, like, seeing the book in your hands as well. It's such a different kettle of fish to everything I've been doing for the past couple of years.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That's different with a prose book. Yeah, because I know the alien feeling of kind of working on comic pages on screen and then getting the trade turn up, but doing the book when you just page after page of Word doc.
Yeah.
And something else.
And,
there's something really transformative to seeing it in a physical copy, isn't there? It's just suddenly almost a little alien to you, isn't it? Like, doesn't quite feel as you thought it would do. When we got our comic through, I thought, I love it, but it's just weird to see it like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It is weird. And then you find yourself reading bits of it again, even though you've looked at it a billion times. There's a lot of people out there who have created a comic and they've looked at it a million times, but as soon as they get the printed copies through, they'll still sit through and read it.
I read the letters again and chuckled at them. And I must look at those letters pages about 300 times.
Yeah.
It's something valid about, something that makes it valid about having it physically there as an item. It's gone through processes to get it into your hands. It's a lot different than just viewing it on screen. Perhaps that's just the kind of we think we've been over this before, but generational thing of like the value of digital stuff. To me it seems kind of less than having a physical
object. Certainly like with the novel, it came out sort of Halloween. That was when we sort of launched it, because it just, you know, it's been around for a bit, but it's not until like the physical's there that I'm really probably going to shamelessly self-promote it. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like, because I knew there was a lot of people that wanted a printed copy.
You like to hold hard cash in your hand over as well, don't you? The feeling of that.
I like cold hard cash.
Cockroach.
So if someone wanted to get the digital version, Vince, where would they go to?
He's back.
I never left.
Beast is back.
Oh, we've created a monster. I love it. No, but currently the digital is available on Amazon. So if you just type Devil Kickers into Amazon, it'll pop up. And you can't miss the cover because I designed it with the words really big on the cover, so you can't miss it. So, thank you to everyone who's like...
Big words.
Yeah, we love big
Second
words.
Second book, it'd be like Vince Hunt, like 2/3 of the title.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Do you think you should put next to your name, "It's not rhyming slang" every time you come to London? Do you think you should
shut up? It's not like I haven't heard that before.
Sorry?
The "shut up, Tony" catchphrase. You haven't heard that one in a
while,
have we? Yeah.
It'll come back. But yeah. Anyway, comics. Tony, do you want to talk about your recommendation?
Yeah, I'll do mine. It is Punk's Not Dead, Teenage Kicks, issue 1.
Yeah.
Which is a book we've been waiting for ages.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I put a little review. I try not these days. I've started trying not to do reviews online as the same ones I talk about, but I'm so fucking excited by this. As I wrote out the little sort of notes that I wrote for the pod, and I thought, and as I was sitting there, I thought, right, I've got to type something about this as well, because I think everyone needs to know about this, you know. There's two covers. There's a cover A and a cover B. Cover A is by Martin Simmons. Cover B is by Bill Sienkiewicz. And I've got to tell you, they're both equally as good. I would put each up against the other any day. Fucking superb. My comic shop, because they know I love Sienkiewicz, put the Sienkiewicz cover, which is cover B, into my pull list. And I went back into Orbital and bought Martin's cover yesterday because I like them both. It's published by Black Crown, / IDW, Black Crown being the small imprint of IDW run by Shelley Bond. It's written by David Barnett. It's got art by Martin Simmons, colour flats by Dee Cunniffe, who we talked about a few weeks ago, didn't we? Do you remember?
Yes.
Kelly.
And we may be talking to in the near future.
Letters by Aditya Bidikar. Now, do you remember, Dan, we spoke to Shelley about this when she was in Orbital that time. I think she'd just been on Word Balloon, actually, funny enough. And I spoke to Shelley and said, oh, I really enjoyed your interview, and just to say that I'm really looking forward to Martin's work. And she actually said, she says, I will quite openly say this, she said, I think he's the new Sienkiewicz, is what she said.
Nice.
And I think a lot of people will be discovering Martin, because this book is, I mean, I love his work. I really enjoy his work. It's I think I describe it as, you know, often beautiful and experimental and, you know, stylish and, you know, but this is really genuinely the next step up for him. The story is it opens on a boy called Fergal Ferguson, who is a sort of redheaded, sort of slightly weedy kid in a school playground. And he's surrounded by a circle of other kids shouting, fight, fight, fight. And he's fighting some big oaf of a sort of school kid called Oggy, who looks like he's literally going to just beat him down to the ground. And you turn to page two, which is the splash sort of title page, and whispering in his ear is Sid, who, if you read the back matter, is clearly not Sid Vicious. They make it clear this is not Sid Vicious. I'm not sure why they do that, but it might be a sort of a copyright thing, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Because it looks exactly like him. There's no two ways about it. For those who don't know, Sid Vicious is, I think he played on like one song on a Sex Pistols album because he was just sort of slightly unreliable. I think he coins the phrase, why have you got two strings on your bass? Well, in case one breaks, you know, I think he's that sort of bass. Yeah, I don't know. Let's not get there. But he's sort of whispering in his ear, and then it flashes back and you discover that Fergal and his mum are, they travel around sort of tawdry chat shows and pretend to have had some sort of trauma in their lives. And they're on, what's that crap that's on ITV in the mornings that I never see?
Not Good Morning Britain.
No, the one after that is the sort of
Jeremy Kyle,
like it's Jeremy Kyle type character, and he's there's little sort of titles that flash up along the bottom because it's like basically it's a shot of the TV screen almost. So Martin's even done the sort of lines across it as if it was, you know, the transmission, and it's called he's called Johnny Kale, and Today When Kids Go Bad, Benefits or Bust. So these are the sort of titles you get along the bottom screen: Lazy Good for Nothing Son, Drugs and Gay Porn, Angela Roberts Has Had an Awful Life, and Put Upon Mum Spills the Beans. And then the last one, they have a sort of have a moment on screen because he sort of goes a little bit off script and says how he misses his father. And the last one is Lazy Gay Porn Drug Son Says Sorry. There you go, that's the title. So the scene then switches to what I think is probably going to be another strand in the story, to number 10. And there's a policeman standing behind number 10. And you go inside and it looks like it's the Prime Minister's bedroom. And there is a woman called Dorothy Culpepper, who I'm going to say if Shelley Bond was a grandma with a red beehive, this would be how she'd dress. You know, she's quite a mod, isn't she, Shelley? She's this, so it's a sort of mod character who's the head of this MI5 department called the Department for Extra Unusual Affairs. Extra Usual Affairs.
Yeah.
And so she's fighting a demon rat in the wardrobe of the Prime Minister. She comes out, and the Prime Minister says, "What are you doing?" And she says, "Oh, I've caught it for you, and I've stolen a pair of your leather trousers." And she sort of leaves. And they're the two strands that you get as the story progresses. Obviously, we get a bit about how Fergal meets Sid. He meets him in the gents at Heathrow Airport. Sid discovers that Fergal's the only one who can hear him and see him, and they become pals. And that's the sort of midpoint in the comic, so I won't spoil it beyond that. But it really does take off, and it goes to something that is just going to be just a joyous comic to follow. To me, it's also the comic you've got to read monthly. There's so much in it. I mean, some pages got like 9, 10, 12 panels in them, you know? Really detailed stuff. I have to say, there is that stylish music element to it, you know. I mean, he's going through albums and playing a Ramones album and all this sort of thing. It's also about this boy discovering his mum and, you know, in his life and where his dad is and all that sort of thing. It really does remind me of a cross between something that you'd find in Deadline and something you would have found in the sort of early, more British influenced days of Vertigo, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's absolutely brilliant. Find it. If you go to neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk, there's a load of images I've put up from it. If you like books like Hellblazer, The Books of Magic, Shade, Kill Your Boyfriend, Deadline, Escape Magazine, something like that from the 90s, and this is going to be right up your street. But if you didn't and you don't remember those titles, give it a chance anyway, because it's so beautifully told.
I can't wait to read this one.
Yeah.
It's sort of. I mean, Martin's style, I've seen, like, he's always been, for me, one of the best anyway, but he's evolved as well. I mean, have you seen that Quicksilver cover that you posted the other day?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, yes, I did, yeah. Yeah, it's Ace. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As we all know, he did a cover for Jessica Jones, which is hands down one of the best covers. Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. And thankfully, the folks at, like, these bigger companies and stuff are thinking, yeah, we need him to get to do another cover, because it's just...
Yeah.
It's awesome stuff. Yeah. So look at, if you haven't seen it, Dan, look it up on, I think it's Twitter. I think he's got an Instagram as well, I think. But yeah, Quicksilver, that's amazing cover. But the style on in this book, there really is an evolution, isn't there? There's a real cleanness to it. There's a crispness to it that I haven't seen in Martin's work.
Yeah.
Like this before. So, yeah, amazing. Yeah, I can't wait to read it. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah.
I was looking his I think Twitter or Facebook thing, and he was talking about how he's working digitally now on an iPad Pro, and he's got like a paper texture put on the screen. So when he draws digitally, it feels like when you're drawing on paper. I was like, that's fascinating. I didn't even know those things existed.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
good. I've not gone digital yet, so I'm kind of really out of the loop as far as that goes.
I feel like I'd need that kind of thing. I didn't know that existed, but that's something I'd I definitely want to use something like that. We have been threatening to get Martin on the show for a long time. It's going to happen.
Yeah, one of us had to change or something, didn't we?
Yeah.
He was going to come on in our first year, I think, at one point, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But
it'd be a joy to have on the show. We can talk Photoshop actions.
Again. Photoshop actions. Do you remember that, Dan?
Bore Tony off.
Yeah.
And what about your recommendation, Vince?
Why, thank you, Daniel.
He's back!
He's a beast. He's a beast. Yeah. Oh, it's so good every week, Dan.
No one's going to get that joke apart from us three. Because
look,
we have to
like
set that link up beforehand.
It's like that every week. No one ever gets our jokes apart from us.
If anyone listens to this and thinks this is a bit weird, we've had to sort of jigsaw puzzle this episode together, haven't we?
Yeah.
Or you have, Vince. Yeah.
Yeah. So my recommendation for this week. I had a list of lots of like little titles that I could potentially talk about, but I need to, and certainly some more small press that I need to read a bit more so I can talk about them confidently. But there was one book I read this week that I just couldn't get out of my head, and I've read it a couple of times since. It is from Marvel, and it is a book that we've talked about a couple of times on this show. And yes, this week I had the chance to read issue 6 of Punisher the Platoon.
Oh, so good. Oh, my God.
This...
You two have been selling this. I can't fucking wait to get a copy.
Oh, I love this so much.
Yes. Yeah. For those who don't know, Punisher the Platoon is a standalone kind of story. It's six issues, so this is the final issue. And it's basically Frank Castle's first tour in Vietnam. It's like his first sort of action in Vietnam. The creators are Garth Ennis, of course, the writer. We've got Goran Parlov, he's the artist. Jordi Belair is the colorist. Rob Steen is the letterer. And we got a cover by Goran Parlov and Giada Marchiozzi. Yo, I've messed that up completely.
That sounds fine.
Yeah, okay. No, it sounds fine. but we've mentioned it a couple of times on this show, and I'm going to be hard-pressed to say whether Marvel will do better than this all year.
We did issue one, didn't we, I think, six months ago.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I'm... Because you did it 1 week, didn't you? And
that's
I think I
and then
did
you
another...
bought it while I was talking about it, do you remember?
Yeah.
You went, oh, this is out, I'll buy that, yeah. Yep.
And, yeah, I've been buying it ever since, and it is just... It's spectacular storytelling on every level. There's going to be... I'm not going to say any spoilers for this, because, I mean... there may be a minor spoiler in the sense of I have to read out a bit of dialogue just so you see how good it is.
I think I'm going to guess what you're going to read out. You read it and I'll see if I'm right.
Okay. Well, they're talking about Frank Castle, and basically the setup of the platoon is someone is interviewing the platoon that he was commanding for his first tour of duty in Vietnam.
Years later, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And they're all a bunch of grizzled sort of survivors. And they've all got some great stories to tell. And you think it's going to be the story of, like, Punisher. You know, when you think of the Punisher, you think of the psychopath who's taken out lots of people. This is not that story. If you're looking for an ultra-violent Punisher being a psychopath story, this isn't it. In fact, this doesn't have the Punisher in it. This entire story, this is Frank Castle. And that is what fascinated me. But one of the bits of dialogue that got me... And pardon me for reading all this bit out. It said one of the members of the platoon. He says, Frank Castle saved the life of every man in his platoon. Got him through one nightmare after another. Sent him home to have kids and grandkids that wouldn't even have existed otherwise. Some of them he shielded with his own flesh and blood. You understand how important that is? You see how much more important it is than first kills and the Punisher and all the other answers to the mystery you people always want to know? You see the kind of man he could have been. And that line there just floored me. Because it is one of those... Everyone talks about the Punisher being the psychopath, the Punisher. This is truly a book about him as a man. And it's stunning. I honestly think, you know, Garth Ennis... I mean, I'm an uber fan of, like, the Max series. I don't think there's been a better Punisher writer in my... opinion.
I agree.
I think he is the best. When you get him, when he hits his stride, you know, it's phenomenal anyway. You put him with Parlov on the art and they are untouchable. It is just the artwork that they take moments, and it's all character moments. It's not gory. It's not brutal. This is character. And some of it, Parlov will just focus on the look in someone's eyes. And that does more than any explosion or gunshot or anything. I mean, it's quite a moving book, isn't it, Tony?
It is. I mean, the bit I thought you were going to read out, I'm going to do it. I'm going to read it out now because I think it's worth it. He's beaten this sort of female Vietnamese assassin sort of fighter. She's sort of really lethal fighter. And then they flash back to the two of them. Sorry, to the group of them talking. And he says, then she turns just for a moment. There's a look between the two of them. And the reporter says, a look. And he says, do you mean like her respect for an enemy, or he's going to give her a clean death? And he says, do you know what it was? Nobody's goddamn business but theirs. And it's just such a great fucking line.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yep. Yep.
And it's done on a page turn as well. You have turned the page, that last sentence, and I think that's just perfection.
And,
do you know what I mean?
And I know this is the third time we're going to do it, but I have to quote another bit because it's just... when you see the sort of Vietnamese sort of commander who's looking over the spot where everything is, and there's planes about to come in with an airstrike.
Yeah, I know.
And he knows exactly what's coming, and like, you know, because they're not cookie cutter bad guys. You see it from their perspective in some of this story as well. And there's some guy, one of his sort of lesser officers is talking about how they're going to win the day. And the commander officer merely says, "Today, God is American." And he rides on iron horse. He rides an iron horse on wings of fire. God, Jesus Christ! Ennis is,
he's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, he knows his stuff.
It's just, you know. And I think people will think Garth Ennis, Punisher. We know what we're getting. You don't know what you're getting with this book. I would say that I probably thought I was going to get a certain thing going into it. You know, because when he's done his, he's so well researched, so well structured. Sometimes there's large prose pieces in some of his Punisher work. I think, is it Punisher Born? And this isn't that. This isn't Punisher Born. That's a great story. But this is
it's a war story. It's a Vietnamese war story. And it's not even an origin story, because it isn't the origin of the Punisher at the moment.
No.
It's the story of Frank Castle, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, by a group of men that hear, obviously everyone talk about the Punisher, but that's not the man that they knew.
Yeah.
And that's how the series sort of started, isn't it? It's like, we know what he did for us, and this is that story. I cannot recommend the Platoon enough. I'm double dipping on the trade or hardcover whenever that comes out.
It's got to be a lovely hardcover around it, isn't there?
I can't wait for that.
Not only that, but if you read, I think there's a letters section in the back, and Garth Ennis sort of signed off with a little bit, and he does sort of say he's not finished with Frank Castle or the Vietnam War he was born in. There's going to be another one of his second tour of duty. And he also said, beyond that, he's talking to editor Nick Lowe about another Punisher story, a contemporary one, this time featuring, well, maybe I've already said too much.
Yeah, how good is that?
Yeah. Garth Ennis, we love you. We will follow you.
Let's do Garth Ennis Watch. Let's try and get him on the show.
Oh, yes.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. He's good. Yeah, I love Ennis. He is a standout. So there you go, Punisher the Platoon. I think. I think that's the third week I've mentioned a book that could possibly be in my books of the year. I don't know what's wrong. I seem to be loving everything.
I'll tell you what I'm finding with us at the moment is we're so in love with comics, we're almost having to get dibs on who talks about what book. I desperately wanted to talk about Punk's Not Dead, and I got in early. I said, right, I'm talking about that. It's me. Got dibs on it. It's almost like that, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
I've was going to talk about the Canary science fiction.
Oh yes,
I need to read that. I read that.
Yeah. I think maybe we could take it a little bit each, because that's fucking huge.
Yeah,
right.
I didn't get a chance to read it all, and I want to read it all before I talk about it. But that's great.
Yeah,
see, adventures in science fiction.
Yeah,
adventures in
science. There's plenty to chew on in that.
It's fantastic. The list of creators on it is just mind-boggling. Yeah. How do you get all these people?
Yeah,
they're great.
Oh, Jason Burrows, amazing. So there you go. So many comics to check out. So much great comic chat. And it's been another cracking show. Thank you again, John, for joining us from the other side of the world.
It's the reversal of the fact that we get people on, don't we, and they say, I'm so used to listening to you. I just sort of sat back and listened. I didn't really join in until I realised I was actually on the show. Yeah. It was a bit like that with John. I'm so used to listening to his voice as I'm on the treadmill or in the car or, you know, wherever it is. I better say something to him about that.
He will be back. So we hope you enjoyed this episode, folks. Let us know what you thought of it. There's several different ways that you can get in touch with us. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you want to win that year subscription at Comic House, once again, what's the question, Tony?
Who would be our ideal dates to go on a date with? Who would we like to date?
There you go. So send your answers to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, and I'm sure Tony will share them with us so we can have a good laugh throughout the week.
We might even read some out live.
That'd be good. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we post up the latest guests and whatever, and we retweet whatever. We do whatever. These two have also got the keys to that car, so who knows where that's going.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it was a great little post in the Facebook group this week was, I think Marrow started it, about shelf porn. Everyone's been posting shelf porn.
Yeah.
I really like that one.
What, you mean on Facebook, the group Awesome Comics Torp?
Yeah.
Torp?
Marrow's posted up some photos of his collections, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Hat off to you.
Yeah. Go
on to... really get Marrow on one day. He does make me laugh so much.
Okay, go on to Facebook and search for the group Awesome Comics Talk, where it is just that. It's comics talk, comic process, collections.
Yeah.
None of this selling and all that nonsense. We just want to talk comics. If you go on to Facebook...
There's 500 people in that group now. Do you know that?
I know.
Nice.
We hope you all listen. Yeah. If they don't listen, I'm essentially talking to myself.
What did you say?
Go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast as well. Follow us on there. And thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave a cheeky review. I think we've had a couple of recent ones.
There were some reviews on the Podbean, but I don't know how to access them.
Didn't we?
Yeah.
We'll have to look into that.
I screenshot them to you, didn't I, the other day?
Yeah.
So, thanks for leaving a review on there.
Yeah, thank you for leaving us any kind of review, whether you listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other pod networks are we on, Tony?
Oh, my God. I'm fucking blasted today.
Oh,
pod balls. I don't know.
I tell you what, I'm going to... I'm suffering here with a bit of a cold.
And oh, here we go again.
Do you know what? I'm going to...
This again.
Don't shut up, Dan. Like, I'm going to take pride in the fact that Tony was the one that lost it.
Oh, and do you know where you can get our comic from? Oh, here we go. Look at this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. No, I did mess up because I didn't even do that link. Dan, where can people get Awesome Comics number one?
Not only can you get it online at our big cartel store, it's now being stocked in Orbital Comics.
Yeah,
which is going to be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, they took some stock off us on Saturday. It's also in Comics Den in Rochdale and Destination Venus in Harrogate. If you are a comic shop and would like some comics to stock, then please send us an email and we'll send you out some.
Yeah,
to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
I've got another bunch of them to send out either Monday or Tuesday because. Last week I was just getting absolutely blasted at work. I didn't get any breaks.
Tony's
so,
been blasted. Yeah. You're being blasted. What on earth is happening?
Oh, no, I was fine. It was just I don't want a blasting. Work. I found that the worst day to go down to the post office to send comics is a Monday because everyone thinks, oh, fuck, I didn't post anything over the weekend. Let's go down on a Monday.
Yeah.
And you regularly go, oh, shit. So I'll probably do it Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, they get their comics quickly. You know,
I'm also getting receipt of Fanzine tomorrow. That should be arriving through my door. Well, it won't arrive through the door. If it did, it would bash my door down because I think it's about $400 each. But I've got you two boys a sexy coffee.
Thank you.
Lovely. Oh, yeah, nice, so
Tony. Giving that to you at Swindon Comic Event.
Yay. Which you'll hear more about soon.
Yeah,
you could use it to access your first floor windows.
Or hold up that wonky table. Or if you've got a flat tire, you can always use it to lift your car up.
We've only printed about 50 or something, so it's a bit of a collector's item.
I'm going to treasure that.
Those environmentalists after you for that huge section of the forest. Take it down.
I'm worried about my landing.
if it's anything like Dan's, you always stick it. Stick the landing. Anybody? Nobody?
That joke didn't land. That was a good
irony.
Sometimes I feel like I'm wasted on you two, but then again, you are both blasted. Anyway, thank you for listening, everyone. I hope you all have a brilliant week. Check out Wordballoon. There's tons on there.
Yes.
Yeah. The Rucker debrief and the Bendis tapes are always worth listening. They listen. Yeah, there's so many guests. You'll get lost listening to them. So, but until then, thank you for listening. From Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week, read loads of comics, stay healthy, and as always, stay awesome. Go on, Dan, you can do it. And as always,
stay awesome.
No, you didn't even do that. Do you know what? I give up. See ya, folks.
See ya.
See ya.
they don't know it by now, they'll never fucking know it.
We might get the American listeners, though, from fucking John.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you could. All right, then. So this is an outtake, right? Where can people where can people find us? On Twitter, etc., Tony.
Oh, funny you should ask that.
Yeah.
Ezohyz, neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk or my balls.
Dan?
I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic. Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
And you can also sometimes find him on Tony's balls.
Or the right ball, which I call Pierre.
You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com. And normally this goes in the actual show, but you're getting it in an outtake this week.
But fuck you.
Yeah.
Is Dan there? Oh, should I call Dan in?
Yeah, call Dan in.
Yeah. Add people to this call. I'm like a fucking idiot savant.
So you're learning, aren't you?
Without the savant bit.
Yeah. You're like a cabbage that's gained sentience. I'm so sorry.